Welcome to the Healthy Seas Podcast, a show about what we need to do to have just that, healthy seas and a healthy future. I'm your host, Crystal DiMicelli, and in each episode, we talk about the problems facing the seas and oceans and the solutions we have to fix them. Come on in, the water's fine. Today, I'm talking with Nodir Dreyer, the co-founder of Ocean Conservation Namibia. This organization is unique in that its main mission is to rescue marine life, primarily seals, from entanglements along the coast. Since 2013, they have saved over 3,500 of them from a painful fate caused by this plastic waste. They use direct action, exposure, and education on social media to bring awareness to this problem and inspire people to make earth-friendly choices. Hi, Nodir. It's so nice to chat with you today.
Cool. Thanks so much for having me. I've been a fan of the podcast for a long time, and I'm really stoked to be here. Thanks.
Excellent.
So let's dive right in. What is Ocean Conservation Namibia, and what inspired its inception?
So Ocean Conservation Namibia is a nonprofit organization established in 2020. Basically, our primary objective is to raise awareness on the impacts of plastic pollution on marine life. The main way we do this is through our seal rescue videos. Last year, we had nearly 900 seals for the year. So we are catching sea animals, mainly seals, but whatever else comes along, actually animals that have been entangled or have had conflict with plastic. And through social media, we try to raise global awareness on the impacts of this plastic pollution. I've grown up next to the ocean. I have grown up surfing, diving, fishing, kayaking. I've always been in the sea. And I've always just felt a sort of sense of responsibility for the ocean. Working as a kayak guide, I saw probably about 12 years ago by now, saw a seal entangled in a big bunch of net. The first time I'd sort of noticed this, this was not right. I could see this animal would have died. So we dragged him out the beach, cut him loose, and that just sort of started steamrolling from there. Once we realized, okay, wow, this is a possibility. Let's help these animals. It just took off from there and got bigger and bigger until we got to a point where we realized, okay, let's actually start an organization and do this on a full-time basis and take it to the next level.
What are the most common types of plastic pollution affecting Namibia's marine life, and what are their sources?
Well, for us specifically, Namibia, actually, the beaches are pretty clean. We do not have any major rivers flowing into the ocean, so we're not getting general household plastic all that much, and we've got a very small population. So what we're dealing with is mainly ghost fishing gear, actually, plastic from the fishing industry in the form of fishing lines, nets, packaging straps, and byproducts from the fishing industry. And again, the source of all of these would basically be fishing as well as general shipping, not just specifically to mainly fishing, but shipping as well. But I would say that sector coming from the ocean side is probably comprising 80% of the entanglements we're dealing with.
How are the seals getting trapped in this plastic waste?
Seals by nature are extremely playful animals. You see videos of them underwater. They're really like the puppies of the ocean. They're very social animals, especially when they're younger. And especially for the first year, they don't really have any responsibility. They nurse from their moms for a whole year. So they just spend their time playing in the water, literally just playing. And they will find any piece of rubbish lying, floating in the water, lying on the seafloor, pick it up, throw it in the water, swim around it, swim through it, and this is how they end up getting themselves stuck in these items because they're really just playing with it.
Why are the nets getting abandoned in the first place?
So you won't find good functional nets being abandoned. This is old gear. So on a big piece of trawler net, for example, that we find on a seal, the guy's out fishing, the net might snag on a rock and get a tear. They'll repair it at sea, and whatever the off-cut piece is, just chuck it in the water or just leave it negligently on the deck. It might blow off with the wind or get washed off by a wave. Big bundles of fishing line. We get this thick commercial monofilament fishing line is our number one highest entanglement. And these are guys, commercial fishermen fishing with hand lines. So they'll be reeling in these lines, standing on the lines. The lines get knotted. This line is so cheap that it's much quicker for them to just cut this whole knot off, toss it in the water, tie a new knot, and keep fishing. And yeah, the stuff sort of, it's not very, very negatively buoyant. It sort of floats slowly in the water column, and it's probably quite intriguing for a little seal pup if it's floating past him to play with.
Do you have any programs to recover them before they become a danger? And how?
We try and raise awareness again through our videos, trying to sort of stop it at the source. We are spending time in the docks. A big problem is as well our local fishing docks. There's a lot of open rubbish bins, skips, so things get put in there in the right place, but they still get blown out by the wind. So just trying to raise awareness on that. It's very difficult. Where do we start? We've got a nearly 2,000 kilometer long stretch of coastline. So where would we even start to pick up? And the seals have a massive range. So they're picking it up from maybe sometimes 200 meters deep to right on the shoreline. So the trick would be to stop it at the source. And unfortunately, with the fishermen, seals are not very popular amongst fishermen either. They see them as a massive competition to their own resource. So I do believe the only way to actually get some sort of action out of them is when it affects their bottom line, when it costs them money. So there needs to be much stronger penalties in place. There needs to be more enforcement. There are rules, but rules are only as good as the enforcement. So there needs to be a lot more enforcement. And I think this is the angle we're trying to push for more now, trying to get into a policy level.
Could you walk us through the process of a typical seal rescue?
So it's quite a, if you look at our videos, there's quite a few different, I want to say, techniques we're using. It depends firstly very much on the size of the seal and its proximity to the water, its proximity within another group. If it's on its own, it's fine. But if it's in the middle of a group of 10,000 other seals, everything changes. So it's quite a dynamic process that's ever adapting and changing. So usually we will try and crawl in, stalk as close as we can to the group, and then run in, try and intercept the seal before it reaches the water. And we've got some specialized gear, especially our nets. The nets have been a game changer for us. They allow us to catch seals now over 200 kilograms in size. And yeah, once we've secured the seal in the net, again, it's specially built, so we've got two sets of zippers on it, and we can then, a big seal will take three or four of us to pin it down. Otherwise, the thing just tosses us in the air. And then we access the entanglement, cut it free, and let it go. But that's, in theory, how it should always happen. It's not always the case. So just last week, we were in extremely rocky, very slippery rocks area, so we kept falling. And so everything doesn't always go according to plan. So we need to really think on our feet and be ready for anything that comes our way.
And tranquilizing them is not an option?
It is in some cases. And some places do use tranquilizing as their primary option, but these places are dealing with a handful of seals a year, where we are sometimes dealing with 30 seals a day. Also, you would need to have vets on board in place to do this. And there's been maybe one or two cases where we thought, okay, cool, this would be a case for a tranquilizer, but most of the times our systems do work. We want to get it done and get to the next one. Our primary objective is just to get as many seals helped as possible. And if we start doing it this way, it's really going to slow down the process and just make everything a lot more complicated, also a lot more expensive.
It's heartbreaking to hear that there are that many seals that need to be disentangled.
Yeah, look, we've got nearly 1.5 million seals in Namibia. So just by sheer numbers, there is a lot. But you would find the same ratios in any other country. Wherever you have enough seals, you will find just as many entangled ones. We're just lucky that we have access to so many and that we're allowed to do the work that we do.
And what are the biggest challenges you face during these rescue operations?
Well, on a personal level, safety is always a concern for ourselves and for the animals. We, like for example, for the last 2 months, we've done very few rescues because all the new pups have been born. They can't swim for the first few weeks, so we can't just go charging into a group and have these seals stampede into the water. The little ones will literally drown or get trampled by the big ones. So we're always worried about the safety of the animals first. Ourselves, we do get bitten every once in a while, but nothing major has happened yet. So we do need to take caution on that. And then just on the biggest picture, limitations, just red tape, bureaucracy. The colonies we get only represent about 20 or 30% of all the seals in Namibia. So there's still a lot of animals which are in special parks, highly sort of closed off areas that we just can't access, which we really want to. So it's all about having permits and special permissions and escorts and things going into these areas. Some of these are mining areas. So it's very difficult for us to actually really get to do our work to its full potential, let me say.
Now, OCN has rescued over 3,500 seals from entanglement. Can you share a success story that stands out to you?
For me, if you go on our YouTube channel and you search for seal rescue and Julius. Julius was a big male seal and he had this, I don't know where the name, Julius, whenever one of our seals get a name, then you know there's a lot more personal link to this animal. It's normally one we've been trying to get for a while. So Julius was a very sneaky, like he knew exactly when we were looking for him, and we saw him about 5 or 6 times before we actually got him, and it just became very personal with him. And then he disappeared for quite a while, and we thought he'd actually might have died out at sea from his injuries. And he came back, he was a little skinnier, and we managed to get him in the end. It was just a very heartwarming moment to finally bring him in and be able to help him after we thought we hadn't. And then every once in a while we'll get these pups that are literally 3-4 weeks old that are entangled already. And those are always really special because, you know, this animal has almost just been born, hasn't had a chance to live in any way yet. And they grow so quickly at this age that these entanglements would kill them so quickly. So it's always extra special to be able to help an animal like that, or a very pregnant female or something like that, where you know that you're doing a little bit extra by saving this animal's life.
Going back to Julius real quick, what was his entanglement like?
It was a big white net, a plastic polymer netting, but big white. He was wearing it like a big scarf around his neck. So he was clearly visible. So we could see him every time, and we would pick him up and just think, how is he going to get us today? And oh man, he really made us work to eventually get him.
And it was wrapped around his neck.
Yeah, really tightly. It was starting to cut in as well. It got to a point where he could not hunt anymore. That's where he came back to shore. And we did see him again a couple of weeks later. It recovered really quickly. The nice thing is with salt water is the best cure for these animals. We get asked very often why we're not administering antibiotics and disinfectants and things. And the truth is that the salt water is just amazing. We've seen this over and over. And we've never found an animal dead after we've disentangled it. It's not to say it hasn't happened, but having dealt with so many animals, we've never once found one that had not made it afterwards.
That's good to hear. So what does your everyday look like doing this kind of work?
So we'll try and go out to sea, to the beach 3 or 4 times a week. Around that, on me personally, every day, I've got 3 young kids as well. So there's a lot of time dropping off kids, sport, homework, things like that. And then also the whole organization as a whole is a lot more than just the seal rescues. We spend a lot of time doing podcasts, online Zoom meetings and things. We're doing training. We're doing presentations for NGOs, for school groups, things like this. So we are being kept pretty busy all the time. And then always scheming, planning for future plans, what we can do to improve our own things and where we can help, what we can communities we can reach, or how we can get our message out there to more people.
What strategies does OCN employ to combat plastic pollution and its effects on marine life?
We've got a lot of more online campaigns. We are doing some local beach cleanups, and we do school visits and things on a local level. And on a bigger scale, we are constantly campaigning. We've done a very big, a nearly 2-month-long social media campaign on, firstly, the impacts of plastics and just how, on a personal level, everybody, what they can do to reduce the amount of plastics they're using, and small tips to change behavior that might affect a bigger change if everybody actually starts to do it.
Do you have any opportunities to work directly with the fishers?
Like I said, they're not the biggest fans of seals. We do have a good working relationship with a few of them, though, especially in the harbor. So we actually get called out pretty often by fishermen when they find an entangled seal. We can't be everywhere at once. So that's always really cool when a fisherman actually calls us to report an entangled seal or an animal that we can help. And then it just shows you that as much as they might not like seals, at the same time, this is a welfare issue. These animals are dying needlessly and suffering immense pain due to human negligence. This is not a fight between them and the fish. This is just a basically common human decency to want to help an animal that's in pain. And this is always really cool to see.
Yeah, that does sound really cool. Has the situation changed throughout the years that you've been working?
Definitely, especially on a local level. Obviously, we try to start first on a local level to get as many people a lot more conscious, a lot more aware. We've been part of a big campaign to block single-use plastics in Namibia, which is still a thing, especially shopping bags and things like this. So we've actually been cited in the sort of public announcement about the rules to drop or the campaign to drop shopping bags. So we can see the effects of the work we are doing. Our team is still small, though, and we do realize that we are in a position now to be able to reach a lot more people. So we are changing that. We are working on bigger educational outreach programs and to change things locally first. Our reach is much bigger international than local. We get a lot of responses from people all over the world telling us how watching what we're doing and hearing what we have to say has changed behavior, but it's still... Obviously, we want to see this happen on our shores. We would love to get to Pelican Point and not have any rescues because there's just simply no plastic in the ocean, not because there's no seals left.
You want to work yourself out of a job would be ideal.
Yes, that'd be the greatest thing ever.
How does OCN work with the local community and authorities in Namibia to address marine conservation issues? And have you faced any challenges?
We're helping the government agencies wherever we can. We're also facilitating a lot of research from the government agencies because they're often strapped for resources, so we'll help them out. We'll take people along to the beach when they're doing data collection. We will do data collection for them wherever we can. And then we're working with other NGOs and the Ministry of Education to try and create a sustainability toolbox, a marine literature toolbox aimed at youth, but not just youth, for everybody, just to help people learn a bit more about the importance of the ocean, especially in a place like this where so many people are dependent on their livelihoods from the ocean and what we can do to try and preserve it. So there are projects in place. On top of that, also working more with NGOs than the private sector or the government sector. So a lot of we do quite a bit of campaigning against offshore mining. There's some big proposed oil drilling projects and things coming to Namibia as well as phosphate mining. So we are actively working, or not so much working against, but just raising awareness to people about the concerns that these projects aren't always that transparent about.
And if you're comfortable talking about it, what is the Namibian seal harvest and is it necessary?
So the seal harvests, no. Firstly, it's not necessary, in my opinion, but a lot of people have very different opinions. Again, a lot of people believe that there's too many seals for the fish, for the amount of fish we have, where it's rather a case of there's too many fishermen for the amount of fish we have. So the government issues a quota every year for the harvesting of 60,000 seal pups and 8,000 bulls. The pups were generally used for their skins, for their furs, and the bulls are pretty much exclusively used for their genitalia. Their penises are sent to the east apparently traditional Chinese medicine. I don't know how many Cape fur seals were in China traditionally, but they are used in traditional Chinese medicine and predominantly aphrodisiacs. So the pup harvest has come to almost a complete standstill. The EU blocked the import of seal furs a few years ago, and that was the biggest market. So they still set out every year to harvest the bulls. And this they do because there's a huge market for these. But so again, there are a lot of seals in Namibia, and we cannot criticize people for eating game meat and things like that, or not criticize people for eating general meat, but criticize them for harvesting seals if it's seen as a sustainable resource, if there are enough of them. But the problem is that it's not being done in a scientific way. They are just taking out 6,000 bulls or 8,000 bulls from the biggest breeding colony. So what happens is you're disturbing the harem structures, the breeding structures of these animals. You've got now younger bulls doing the breeding. This is compromising genetics. You've got smaller pups being born and just generally weaker animals coming from this. So no, the seal harvest, firstly, I don't believe it's necessary. Our seals are in great condition at the moment, which is also a reflection of a healthy marine ecosystem. If our seals were all starving to death, this might be a different story, but our seals are actually looking generally very good. What needs to be looked at a lot more thoroughly is the amount of unregulated and illegal fishing happening in our waters, and have more transparency on fishing quota allocations, which we're not seeing. So it's a very complex issue that nobody really wants to touch. But yeah, that's, I don't know, we are fighting against the way it's being done at the moment. It's not being done in a sustainable way. It's, even though there's so few animals being done, it's not a population control, because again, it's being done completely in the wrong way for that. It's done purely for profit, and this should not be the case. So yeah, we would just like to see things being done a bit better.
And the way they do it,
that is the big issue. I'm very much fine with them not harvesting pups anymore, because the pups have always been clubbed. The bulls are still shot. But like I said, the pup harvesters come to an almost complete standstill, and they've tried as they want to find alternative uses for the seals, whether it be for animal food or human food, but nobody seems to want the seal meat. So for this reason, the clubbing of the pups has pretty much come to a standstill for the last 4 or 5 years already.
And what are OCN's goals for the near future? Are there any new projects or initiatives that you're excited about?
So a cool initiative this year is we are starting a bit of like an intern program for other organizations in the world doing similar work to what we're doing. So there's quite a strict like entry criteria in terms of people need to have actual experience in doing seal rescue work, have a good medical aid, good medical cover, be strong and fit, and be actively working in the field. Because we're sitting in a position here where people can get amazing experience. And we didn't have any handbook when we started this. A lot of our techniques and tools and things are sort of improvised and figured out along the way by us. So we do believe other organizations could benefit from learning alongside us. And there's a lot of other techniques we'd like to learn too. So everybody else would bring something different to the table too. So we'll have, for about 6 months, we'll have groups of interns coming from all over the world to come and work alongside us and share information, which we're quite excited about.
How can people apply?
So there's a global pinniped entanglement group that we're a part of, specifically looking at entangled seals, sea lions and things. And it's sort of all been sourced within this group. And again, the criteria is quite strict on people coming from the field, we get 10 emails a day for people wanting to come and volunteer here. And we just can't do that. We're a small team. We can't, when we're out there, our time is really occupied by that. We can't babysit. We can't spend 2 months training someone that's going to stay for 3 months. We lose a lot of man hours then. So this works out really well. We could do with some extra help from people that know what they're doing, people that have worked in the field, that understand seals, how their behaviors, and that can actually bring something productive to the table.
What message do you want to convey to individuals and communities about their role in ocean conservation?
So in ocean conservation, I always like to just say, if a lot of people do small changes, that can have a big effect. So the usual rhetoric of clean up after yourself, if you go to the beach, leave with more than you came with, and just be aware of your use of plastic and also the disposal of plastic. What's happening to this plastic? You throw it in your bin, it doesn't mean it's always going to landfill or recycling. So be sure you know the whole chain, the whole process. And then for people that do still eat fish, there are some sustainable fisheries. If you're going to eat fish, make sure, like, try and get it from the guy down the road who's caught it by hand himself. Do not support big commercial fishing. They are really, they, even with all kinds of certification stickers and things on them, most fisheries are not done in a clean, sustainable way. It's very difficult. You might have to pay a lot more, but cheap fish does not mean good fish. It's really, the fishing industry can be very dirty and very untransparent, very sort of hazy on their processes and things. So if you do eat fish, try and read up, figure out what, especially in your area, what fishes are sustainable. What is their listing? Different countries have different sort of gradings or listings as to the sustainability of the fish. Try and go for the green species, the ones that are either locally sourced or fished artisanally that have a lower impact on the ocean.
Yeah, you certainly get what you pay for, and the cost could be very high, not maybe for your pocket, but for the environment.
Absolutely,
and these other species. This has been really interesting. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today. I think what you guys are doing is so important, and every species, every individual animal, they all matter. And you guys live and breathe that. So thank you for the work that you do.
Thanks so much. I'm really, really stoked that I've sort of told the the group before a while ago. Like, I would like to do a Healthy Seas podcast. I've really been a fan for a long time. So I'm really, really happy to be here. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That means a lot. I really appreciate it.
Healthy Seas is a nonprofit on a journey from waste to where. Founded in 2013, the organization aims at reducing marine litter caused by lost fishing gear through cleanup, prevention, and education activities. The nets collected by Healthy Seas are subsequently reused and recycled and used by its partners for the creation of new products.